Welcome to the 21st. I'm Nyla Boodoo. We're still feeling days later the ripple effects of the weekend's events in Charlottesville, Virginia, where a group of neo-Nazis and white supremacists protested the removal of a Confederate statue. When counter-protesters pushed back, a car plowed into them and killed 32-year-old Heather Heyer. Yesterday, President Trump added fuel to the fire by claiming that, quote, both sides were responsible for the weekend violence, not specifically neo-Nazis and white supremacists. Today, we're going to be talking to people in Illinois about how they're reacting to all of this. And we want to hear from you. What conversations have you been having about this that you'd love to share with us right now? Give us a call at 1-800-222-9455. Again, that number is 1-800-222-9455. You can also tweet to 21STShow. In a few minutes, we're going to be speaking with a Black Lives Matter activist in Springfield, one of the co-founders of that chapter, as well as the co-founder of Life After Hate's Christian Picciolini. But first, on Sunday, State Senator Daniel Biss gave a speech on the floor of the State House. It was while senators were passing a resolution condemning the events in Charlottesville. It was also meant to encourage Illinois law enforcement agencies to recognize white supremacist groups as terrorist organizations. Yesterday afternoon, before President Trump spoke, I talked to Senator Biss. He's a Democrat who represents Illinois' 9th District, which includes the northern Chicago suburbs from Glencoe to Evanston, where he lives. Senator Biss, welcome to the 21st.
Hey, thanks for having me, Nyla.
This isn't a topic you talk very much about, but you shared the story of your maternal grandmother on the Senate floor on Sunday as there was discussion around a resolution for condemning what happened over the weekend in Charlottesville. Do you mind, can you share the story of what you told your colleagues with our audience now?
Yeah, my mother's parents were born in a small town on the border of Hungary and Romania. And in 1944, my grandmother and her family were put on a rail car, and that took them to Auschwitz. They got off the rail car, and they were separated by generation. My grandmother's generation were sent off to have a serial number tattooed on their arm as though they were cattle or an object. And her parents were sent the other direction, directly to the gas chambers, and they never saw each other again. Now, my grandmother was fortunate enough and scrappy enough to survive and move back to the town where she grew up, got married. My mother was born in September of 1946, and they emigrated to Israel in 1948. And she lived a long life, and at the end of her life, near her death in 2008, she looked back and said that she lived a good life and that she felt fortunate and that she felt blessed. And that's such a powerful lesson about the ability of humans to overcome such extraordinary darkness. But I just can't help but feel that she also felt that she had lived a good life because she thought she had seen this kind of evil vanquished. And when I think about what we saw in Charlottesville last weekend, that we're seeing a rise of a neo-Nazi movement, the rise of white supremacists in America, and then most horrifically, a president who's not willing to be clear about it, I just feel this unbelievable sense of sorrow and confusion about where we've come to as a society. But I also think it's a really important opportunity for all of us to learn about the importance of doing the right thing. You know, one of the kind of funny luxuries of having a president who does the right thing in this moment is that it can sometimes make the rest of us feel as though we're absolved of our own responsibility to act in a certain way. But of course, each of us has a responsibility. Each of us needs to name evil for what it is. Each of us needs to identify the good in people. Each of us needs to work to lift that good up. Each of us needs to spread the basic values of love and inclusion and acceptance. And it's not good enough for a president or someone else to do it for us. Society thrives if we all do it together. And I just hope we can take this really, really grotesque moment as an opportunity to remember that that's what we have to do.
And I think that when you talk about when especially Holocaust survivors share their stories, there are understandably people who don't want to talk about it, who don't want to share their stories, or who wait until it, as you said, they're to a point when they're later in life, maybe where it's something that they can talk a little bit more about. For you, it sounds like you also feel like this is a moment that you think it's really important to share your family story.
Yeah, listen, I don't talk about it often, though it's an important part of who I am, because I don't want to...
Don't talk about it publicly.
I don't talk about it publicly because I don't want to... the last thing you want to do is to somehow cheapen it or use it for a political purpose. And thank God we live in a society where it's rarely directly relevant to the public discussions of the day. The tragic nightmare is that right now, in August of 2017, it's extremely directly relevant. And yes, I feel an absolute responsibility to share that story.
And when you say that, I was watching Vice News on Monday night, did a whole half hour devoted to Charlottesville, which was remarkable to me in that they basically were just telling the stories of the people who were there. And the reporter was with a lot of the neo-Nazis who were there. And almost every single person of the neo-Nazis who were interviewed said they felt like Sunday was a victory, and it was really important for them because they want everyone to know that this isn't just an internet movement, that this isn't just random people on the internet, that they're real people who, in the words of one of the gentlemen she interviewed, they want to start a cleansing to take back their homeland. And it, when you hear things like that, I wonder, it's just so hard to hear people say that as you said in 2017, that people are actually saying that. And I wonder what kind of reaction you have to the fact that there are people who are very comfortable saying this publicly and marching and saying that they want.
They're not comfortable, Nyla. They're proud.
That's very true. Correct. Yeah.
You know, I want to come back to something else that my grandmother said to me. She said that when the Holocaust was starting and word was coming back to her about what was going on, her reaction was, that's not true. That isn't happening. And the reason it's not happening is it couldn't happen. I know that Germany is on some level the cradle of European society, and Germany is where Einstein comes from and where Beethoven comes from, and it just cannot be. And I just think we need to remember that we see these black and white pictures in history books and assume that what happened then was inevitable, and also assume that the fact that that doesn't happen now is just as inevitable. But no, it's not like that. These explosions of evil are shocking always when they happen. And so I think all of us need to understand that though it is unlikely that that would repeat itself tomorrow in America, it's not impossible. It's only impossible if we all choose to be vigilant.
So this resolution that you all passed on Sunday, the House has also, there bipartisan support in the House to adopt a similar resolution. Why was it important, you think, for the Illinois Senate to pass this resolution? Can you tell us a little bit more about what it said? Because I think sometimes people think, oh, it's just a resolution. Why does this matter?
It is just a resolution. But what it is an opportunity to state clearly what happened and how we feel about it. And I just think that here's what I think. The enemy here is hate, but the enemy is also lies, and the enemy is blurriness and muddiness. It is so unbelievably important to be clear and direct and specific about what happened and who did it and what's wrong and what's right.
And to name that and to say that they're Ku Klux Klan members,
correct,
that they're neo-Nazi members, and not just say this is an, for you, I wonder how you feel about the term alt-right, like what if you think.
I mean, I do think the term alt-right is a little sort of hip and sanitized. You know, I think we need to make sure we have a vocabulary that everybody understands, right? And what we know about Nazis is we know exactly what they did and where they stood. And what we know about white supremacists and the Ku Klux Klan is we know exactly where they stood and where they stand now. And those words mean specific things. And we need a vocabulary that's that specific. And we need to make sure that we don't allow any blurriness, any like what about the other side-ism, any yeah, I mean, sure, they did a certain thing with their arm, but it doesn't really mean that they want to cleanse society of non-whites. We can't allow that blurriness. We need a kind of moral clarity. You know, this is an awkward topic around free speech, right? There's some people who say that the correct response to this is to forget about the First Amendment and shut down this kind of speech. And what I would say is that's not true. But the fact that the speech is allowed to happen places an extremely sacred responsibility on the rest of us to be very direct about what it is and what it means, and very direct about how we put a stop to it.
You mentioned your grandmother. You mentioned on the Senate floor, and you just mentioned this, about how it was important for her to talk about how good her life was, right? Because she ended up, you know, there's a sort of a whole line of, you know, she's your grandmother. Like you have kids, like your family is continuing. How important is it, do you think, to talk about sort of, as you said, you mentioned this on the Senate floor and you mentioned your grandmother saying this, the good in life also?
It's so important. And I think this is an awkward thing to say, Nyla, but I think the bad, too. I think we need to look inside of ourselves and know that that evil can find a home in anyone if we don't watch out for it and conduct ourselves in a certain way. And we also have to know that that good lies in everyone. And that's an every minute of every hour of every day project, to bring out the good, to know and understand and name and then relegate the evil. I worry a lot that we live in a society that thinks about people as good guys and bad guys.
And doesn't realize that that could be the same person.
That exists in everyone. And what we have to do is bring out the good in everyone and build a society that allows the good to rise to the top in everyone.
So when people say, I don't know what to do now, what should I do as an individual person? What would you say to them?
Well, one thing that I think is really important is to have difficult conversations. I think that we live in a society that is pretty dangerously segregated, and people speak more openly and freely in light groups than they do in diverse groups. And I think if you're in a group of people who look like you and live in your neighborhood and you hear them talking in a way that they may not themselves feel comfortable talking, if the room was more diverse, you got to say it then. You got to name it then. I think it's important for us to name our own privilege. I think it's important for us to look inside of our own life histories and know that we got to where we got in part because of luck, in part because of privilege, in part because of what we were born into. And I think it's really important to name that and to understand what that the absence of that privilege does to others. It's so easy in life to look at everything that has been given to you and actually think that you earned it. And that mistake, that conflation of what you've been given with what you've earned, is the beginning of the road to supremacy. We've got to squash it, and we've got to squash it loudly, and we've got to squash it even when that's difficult and awkward and uncomfortable, and it's happening at a barbecue on a Sunday afternoon when people don't want to have that conversation. That's when the conversation has to happen.
Daniel Biss is a senator. He's a state senator. He's a Democrat. He represents Illinois' 9th Senate District, Chicago's North Suburbs. Senator Biss, thanks for being with us. Thanks for sharing your family story with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for giving me this chance.